This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Podcast episode number 55. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is a show where we talk about whatever sci-fi or fantasy books we are currently reading. And there's a lot of news this week, so we should probably jump right into the quick burns.
We made some of the news, sort of.
We participated
in some of the news.
We helped with news.
In a very small way.
So first of all, any fantasy fan worth their salt is excited for A Dance with Dragons. And
Oh my gosh. Finally have a release date.
We have a release date. No fewer than probably 20 people pinged me about this, which was really cool. July 12th, this year, it is coming out. A Dance with Dragons will be released. He says that is the date. There are going to be no more pushbacks. George R. R. Martin is ready to go. He is almost finished. And
that's the best part.
Yeah.
Like when this first broke and I saw people on Twitter talking about it, they were like, he sent it off. It's done. And it's like, actually, when you start to read into it, it's not done. He's still got two chapters he's finishing that he has yet to deliver, but they're going ahead and like typesetting and all the things that they need to do. And then he's going to hand in the last two chapters and it should be printed by July 12th. So I suppose there's always this small percentage chance it could get delayed again. But it sounds like it's in that stage where he's written the chapters. It's just proofreading and editing. And so nothing can go wrong.
My favorite thing is on the blog post on the Wort Zone. Adam writes the little caption underneath the photo of the cover says, for reals.
Yes.
This is it, for reals this time.
No, this is the real thing. This isn't rumor. This isn't like I heard or I saw a thing on Amazon. This is like George R. R. Martin, the publisher, everybody is saying July 12th.
Yep.
That's actually my wife's birthday.
Oh, excellent. You can get her that for her birthday. I'm sure she will appreciate it.
A happy present for her, for me to get and ignore her.
Yes, the blog post says, Martin has also confirmed that A Dance with Dragons is huge and may exceed A Storm of Swords in size. The hardcover will be over 900 pages in length, and once again, the UK mass market paperback will be in two volumes. The hardcover will still be in one.
That's what's really interesting. In the United States, they're going to put out the paperback in one just enormous volume. But in the UK, they're going to bust it into two. So if you're in the UK and you're thinking, well, I want to wait for the paperback to save money. You probably aren't going to save that much money.
Because you have to buy two books.
Because they're going to charge you full paperback price for each one.
Yeah. A Storm of Swords was over 420,000 words in length. And that means A Dance with Dragons is so huge. It's bigger than A Wise Man's Fear, for example, which Patrick told us is 400,000 words.
Oh, my God. It's like six files on Audible.
Yeah. Oh, really? It's going to be so fun. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
I also read that Dance with Dragons is going to have some of the characters from A Storm of Swords, especially near the end. It's not going to be, because remember, if you remember, A Storm of Swords takes place entirely on Westeros, right?
No, Tom, actually, I don't really remember anymore.
Yeah, it's been so long.
I don't really remember anymore. I'm going to have to go back and reread it, I think.
Yeah, and Dance with Dragons is going to catch us up on the other plot lines that we didn't follow in A Storm of Swords.
No, A Feast of Crows was the last one.
I'm sorry, A Feast of Crows. Yeah.
A Feast for Crows.
A Feast for Crows was like half of the story of what was going on at that time.
Right.
And then he said the next one would catch you up on all the other storylines, like Daenerys and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so he says, in A Dance with Dragons, it's not going to be entirely the other storyline. We will get some updates from Westeros as well.
It's going to be rad. Can't wait. So happy.
Looking forward to it.
And speaking of Game of Thrones, goodness, we have the full trailer out now for the HBO series. They have
Did you get a trailer? Did you get a chance to watch it?
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's nothing visually new in it necessarily, but a lot more dialogue in this trailer, and really got me stoked because you see the characters interacting more, and you see the world that they've been building. They also released a an art director's interview where he talks about how they built the sets for Winterfell and for the Capitol and all of that.
Yeah, and to promote all the stuff going on with the HBO series, they've been sending out scent packs. And this is one of the more creative marketing tools I've seen in a really long time. And actually, my friend Violet Blue received one of these and was she took some great photos over on her Posterius gallery. And I said on Twitter, oh, my God, want. This is so cool. Blah, blah, blah. Within an hour, I would say, I had an email from the HBO marketing team and they sent one to me.
That's what happens to you.
Sometimes Twitter works that way. And it is a wonderful thing when it does. And so Tom came over and we played around with the scent pack a little bit. And what did you think? So we had the one that was like the Inn at the Crossroads. I'm sorry, Crossroads. That's Warcraft. Hold on. Let me look at the back.
We had the one that is the Inn in Brill in Tolkien. No, we had the Dothraki Highlands, right? And the grasslands, and then we had the I think it was the Inn at the Crossroads, actually, even though the Crossroads is also from Warcraft. And it was basically one is supposed to smell like bread and leather, like you're inside of an inn, and the other is supposed to smell like grass and horses, mm-hmm. like you're out on the grasslands camping with the Dothraki.
Yeah, so the Dothraki Sea, this is what they wrote. They sent us these like scrolls that they had aged. You know, they look like they're aged scrolls.
Yeah, the whole presentation was really amazing. Well done. It's a real wood box with, with aged scrolls, glass vials wrapped in linen with mm-hmm. rope. I mean, just well, so much attention to detail.
Yeah, I took a few crappy iPhone pictures, but Violet definitely has a really nice gallery of photos. She had a different scent pack than we did, though, which I thought was kind of cool.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Let's see if I can see what hers was. There's a few up close shots of it,
but while you're figuring that out, I'll explain the way it worked. Is you would have three vials per area. So let's say for the Dothraki Sea, you'd have one that was grass, horses, and campfire. Mm-hmm. And we figured out after reading the scrolls in reverse order that you took a little of each one and poured it into a test tube looking thing. And then you would take one of those paper testers like they have at perfume counters, dip it into the test tube, pull it out, kind of shake it a little, you know, to let it evaporate up. And then smell it. And you would be taken to the Dothraki Sea. I really think Dothraki Sea was a misnomer for this one. It was really more like being in the Dothraki camp. Mm-hmm. So it's a little grass, a little campfire, a little horse. Man, the horse worked. Let me tell you.
The horse smelled like horse. And I was correct the first time I said that it was the Inn at the Crossroads. I guess I just heard Crossroads and was like, wait, the Alliance are attacking. Everyone get to the Crossroads. And for that one, it had wood beams, which was cedar and oak, fill the interior of a rustic structure. Pear brandy, a rare and heady spirit imported from the free cities. And crusty bread, welcoming notes of salty yeast lure travelers from the King's Road.
Now, I definitely could smell the brandy, but it a little overpowered everything else for that one.
Yeah, it was a little bit boozy. They were having a big party at the Inn at the Crossroads.
I suppose that could be. That could happen. Anyway, this is all a part of a marketing program that they're going to step up. Apparently, they say you'll get more stuff between now and April 17th when the Game of Thrones finally arrives on HBO.
And I do love stuff, so I'm excited to see what we shall get.
Now, one thing that did finally arrive that we were so excited about was the book that we talked about last episode with its author, Patrick Rothfuss, mm-hmm. Who the day after we interviewed him went on his blog and posted a pledge to buy Firefly from Fox and give it away if his book sells well enough and others join in. He even, you know, kind of pitched it to Nathan Fillion to say, look, if you help, I know Nathan Fillion has said he wants to do this too. He's like, I will help you buy the rights to Firefly from Fox. Let's do this. So he had a reading in San Francisco this past week on Thursday night, and Veronica and I and Josh Lawrence and Christopher, Sword and Laser listener, all showed up, and we got a chance to talk to Patrick.
Yeah, he was great. He was wearing a Serenity shirt, which I thought was very appropriate. He's a big fan.
And we asked him, I was like, really? Are you like dead serious? Like, I am absolutely serious about this. You could tell, like, he means it. He's not sure if he'll be able to pull it off or not, but he's like, I'm thinking, you know, I'm starting to get some interest from people who might be able to pitch in a substantive way. And everybody's suggesting Kickstarter to him where you can go on and start a fund. He's like, but Kickstarter only has a month for you to raise all the money. So he's like, that would be my end game.
Yeah.
Like, when we just need to make a push to get to the last dollars that we need. And the other thing I asked him was, do you think Fox would sell? Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, it's money. So, I mean, if the money's right, I'm sure they'll consider it.
And that was kind of his answer. He's like, yeah, you know, everything's got a price. It's just a matter of whether we can get to that price or not.
Yeah, he says, here's the deal. My second book is about to come out. My publisher tells me there's a decent chance of us selling a truly ridiculous number of copies. If this happens, I will have more money than I'll know what to do with. Except that's not exactly true. I know exactly what I'd like to do with that money. I'd like to help you, Nathan Fillion, buy the rights to Firefly back from Fox. I'm only a fledgling author, but by a strange twist of fate, I happen to be a fledgling author who is also an international bestseller. Left to my own devices, I will probably spend my royalty money on useless bullshit. I will buy rare books and narwhal horns. If the book sells extremely well, I expect I'll probably do something like buy an abandoned missile silo and convert it into my secret underground lair.
He is hilarious, and the book signing was definitely worth attending. If he's coming, because he's on tour right now, if he's coming to your neighborhood, make the time to go out, and he will do a reading from the book. He gave us a choice. Do we want to hear the prologue or something a little farther in? But neither one are spoilery, and then he'll take questions. And it was just really fun. He's a really hilarious guy, as you know, if you listen to our interview. Really honest, good perspective, and he was there with another author, Gail Carriger, who does sort of Victorian steampunk vampire novels.
Yeah, vampire, werewolves. It was interesting too, because as we all know, Rothfuss's writing is a little bit on the darker, more serious side, I guess. It has humor infused for sure, but bad things can happen to good people in his books. And on Gail's side, she says she loves a happy ending. And so her books are, you know, you might get nervous for a second that something bad is going to happen to someone, but it always turns out okay in the end, probably with a big comic twist.
Like what she said about it being a comedy of manners, because and she even said, I'm inspired by P.G. Wodehouse and the Jeeves and Wooster stuff. And I'm just like, that's perfect. I mean, I can totally see that. And I like both. I like the dark, you know, sort of realistic fantasy, if you can use those two words together. I think you know what I mean, that we get from people like Rothfuss and Joe Abercrombie. But I also like the idea of this kind of lighthearted comedy of manners that's very steampunky and involves vampires and werewolves. So I don't know. We should try to get Gail Carriger on the show and talk about her stuff.
That'd be great. It is nice to have something with a little more levity to it after a while, because I'm pretty mired in Abercrombie right now. And there's a lot of bad things happening to good people.
Yeah.
And in Best Served Cold.
So maybe it's sort of your amuse-bouche to go to a Gail Carriger book after a Joe Abercrombie to clear your palate, you know.
Perhaps.
Have something refreshing and fun.
I think that sounds nice.
Another thing that's refreshing, I don't know if it's fun, but it's really interesting. It was a Slashdot posting about a Russian man named Kirill Yeskov, a paleontologist, who was digging into Tolkien in his off time to try to sort of resolve some of the geography that bothered him, and eventually ended up deciding to rewrite The Lord of the Rings from the perspective of Mordor.
Interesting.
It's called The Last Ring Bearer, set during and after the end of the War of the Ring, told from the perspective as if the Gandalf is a warmonger intent on crushing his scientific and technological initiative. Mordor and its southern allies are the defenders of science. Aragorn is depicted as a ruthless Machiavellian schemer who is ultimately the puppet of his wife, the elf Arwen. So, you know, it's all this kind of awesome propaganda telling of the tale from an opposite side, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, that's great. It's been out for a while, apparently. So I'm very interested to see if any of you guys out there have read it. And I would love to check it out sometime, too.
You can go to ymarkov, that's ymarkov.livejournal.com, and you can find a posting for The Last Ringbearer, which has a translation of the essay that you can download in English.
Mm-hmm. And then you added this one, and I'm not sure what the deal with this is.
It's just a review. Yeah,
oh,
well, I know you're a big Ted Williams fan, yes, and the Wordzone had a review up there, so I didn't know if you had anything to share or add to that.
Yeah, actually, I have read, I haven't read this review yet, but I have read Shadow March. Actually, I believe I've read all of the books. I think they're all out. This is pretty funny because I had them on my, I don't know why I had them on my Amazon like wish list, but my mom bought them all for me for Christmas in hardcover. And I opened the box and I was like, yeah, Shadow March. I was like, wait, I read all these already, actually. And she was like, oh, they were on your Amazon list. And I was like, I don't know why I did that.
You forgot to take them off. That's funny.
I guess I did. Yeah, I read them a long time ago, and I guess I just left them on the list and totally forgot about it. But it is a really good series, especially if you're a big fan of Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn, which was really one of the first trilogies that I ever got into, and that was Tad Williams. And that was one of the first book series that really got me into fantasy.
All right. Well, let's get on to the stuff that's coming out soon. We just had a lot of stuff come out March 1st. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a couple weeks before we get a wave of more big releases. March 15th, The Gravity Pilot by M.M. Buckner comes out. It's set in Seattle, or I'm sorry, a future Alaska. He's a young skydiver, but it's sort of a situation where the world is in free fall. It's falling apart. It's polluted. It's gritty. And then he ends up in Seattle being exploited by the sports media and finds out a little bit of the underpinnings of what's keeping the world together. So it sounds like a good post-apocalyptic scenario.
Yeah. And then Black Halo by Sam Sykes is coming out June 16th in the UK and March 22nd around here. The sequel to Tome of the Undergates sees Lenk and his crew attempting to escape the island they were shipwrecked on in a previous volume. Wilt's other forces track down the missing tome. And now Sam Sykes is a really interesting character. I don't know if you've read much about him or read his blog before, but he is young. He is only 25, and
oh my gosh,
he's been writing fantasy for a while now. Tome of the Undergates was actually his first book, and he's been writing for a while now. And I just think it's really great to see such a young author really come into his own and become a success. And so definitely check that book out.
Also, March 22nd, Kings of the North by Elizabeth Moon. That's the seventh Paxanarian novel, second in the Paladin's Legacy series. And then March 29th, we get a big wave of books. Embedded by Dan Abnett, a standalone book featuring a new type of war correspondent who lives in a chip embedded in a soldier's head.
Mm-hmm. And The Land of Painted Caves by Jean M. Aul.
I think Aul is how I've always... Yeah.
Is it Jean or Jean?
You've heard of Planet of the Cave Bear?
Yeah, of course.
This is Jean.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Jean.
I never learned how to say the name.
I don't know if I'm right. That's just how I say it.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. And then on the 29th, Tiasa by Stephen Brust. That comes out on the 29th of March. And finally, Deathless by... What is with these people's names? Man, I am having a hard time with names.
Catherine Valente.
Catherine Valente, spelled Catherynne. Catherine. I like that. It's a nice way.
She takes on Russian folklore, apparently, refashioning the Koshchei, the Deathless, and the Princess Mary Morevna for Soviet Russia. Result is, according to IO9, fantastically weaving 20th century history and fairy tale tropes.
Very cool. A lot of good stuff coming out. It's hard to keep track of everything.
Now, as we mentioned, March 1st, The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss came out. And of course, this episode is brought to you by Audible.com. The world's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And listeners of this podcast get a free audiobook. We mentioned last week that Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss was there so that you could, you know, possibly go try that out. Mm-hmm. Wise Man's Fear is now on Audible. So if you haven't bought the book already, or even if you have, you might want to download that, because it's really fun to listen to this tale being told to you essentially by Quoth, because much of it is in Quoth's voice, first person, as he's telling the tale on the second day of the King Killer's Chronicle.
Yeah.
So try it out for free at audiblepodcast.com/sword.
It's only 43 hours long.
At least you know how much time you need to set aside.
Yes. I didn't mention this last time, but did I mention this on the show, or did I just mention this in Goodreads? I don't think I ever said it out loud on the show, but I was actually a beta reader for The Wise Man's Fear. That's the thing I was alluding to in all the past episodes, and it was a really cool opportunity, but I think I actually want to go back and listen to the book now, because I read it once, and I read it in sections. It would be really nice to now read the whole thing as one unified entity.
And see just, what kind of stuff you were able to give feedback on that maybe not necessarily that you changed particularly, but the kind of things that he took feedback on. And
I changed major plot points.
Really?
I'm sure. Oh yeah. Yeah? No.
Did you kill anyone?
Not a single one. It was all like grammar nerd stuff, basically. Like
somebody gets mad and asks him at one of these reading events, like, why did you kill so and so? And it's Veronica's fault.
Oh, that was all Belmont. That was all Belmont. Yeah, I don't know why I took her advice. What a weirdo. All right, well, it's time now for Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. We've got a thread here about Jim Butcher and his new novel, Ghost. He's posted a sample chapter. Halbert 42 was writing about this. He says, "Hey, Dresden fans, they posted the first chapter from Ghost right here on the Penguin site. More to come. July 26 is the date. The month is looking like the best month of the year for fantasy, with Martin finally getting us some more goodness, too."
Nice. That's awesome. And I know you are a huge Jim Butcher fan. Have you gone and checked this out already?
I haven't. I haven't read it yet. I think I'm one or two books behind now. I have to go back and kind of figure out where I left off in the series and go back and pick up, because the books are so wonderful. And I even loved the show when it was on. I don't know how many of you guys saw that out there, but they had a show on Sci-Fi. Was it on Sci-Fi?
I believe so, yeah.
And I thought it was great. The intro music was kind of cheesy. There were some cheesy aspects to it, but it was really fun. And I really felt like the actor who portrayed Dresden was very true to the books.
Now, the other thread that we're featuring this week has to do with Shadow and Claw. A lot of the threads that we want to feature are a little spoilery.
Yeah.
And we haven't totally finished Shadow of the Claw. We're going to wrap that up probably next episode. Mm-hmm. But this one is called Father Inire's Fish. Reference spoiler, Shadow chapter 20.
Yeah, so if you haven't gotten to chapter 20 yet, if you haven't heard the whole analogy about Father Inire's fish, you probably shouldn't listen to this part. I know some of you were upset when we talked about a little bit spoilery stuff. Not, I didn't even think it was spoilery stuff.
Spoiler alert yellow.
But anyway, Josh started this thread, our discussion leader for this book, and he said the lexicon Urthis entry on specula, Inir's magical scientific mirrors, reveals the inspiration for the spectral fish Inir is able to summon with the mirrors. Myth. The fauna of mirrors is a Chinese notion that goes back to the legendary times of the Yellow Emperor. Originally, the world of mirrors and the world of men were not divided, nor were they identical, and one could freely travel between the two. For reasons unknown, the Mirror People invaded the Earth one night, but after a terrible war, the Yellow Emperor was able to triumph over them. He imprisoned them in their mirrors and forced them to slavishly repeat all the actions of men. However, they will one day break loose again.
No!
Yes, the first
Scary.
To awaken will be the fish.
Why?
Later on, other shapes will begin to stir. They will break through the barriers of glass or metal, and this time they will not be defeated. Side by side with these mirror creatures, the creatures of water will join the battle.
Whoa. This is some of it from Jorge Luis Borges' stories. And Ed actually pointed out that he read Jorge Luis Borges' stories before reading the Book of the New Sun, and strongly recommends Borges as a reference point for much of The Shadow of the Torturer. Also, Alden O'Neill pointed out that Shina Mieville has a short story called The Tain, which takes Borges' ideas and runs with it in a battle-torn London, explores what happens when mirror creatures are out and about.
That sounds very China Mieville.
Yeah, it does.
And I feel bad for the kid. There's this kid sitting next to me at the reading, and he made some reference to China Mieville and how he's reading it right now when he was asking Patrick a question. And I'd had like two beers, and I was like, oh, I love China Mieville. Was it City in the City? He was like, no, it wasn't. I was like, why am I talking right now?
You were just trying to help him because he couldn't remember the name of the book. That's all.
That's what I get all for right. trying to help. I make an ass of myself.
Speaking of making an ass of yourself.
Thanks.
No, it actually has nothing to do with that.
Just
a quick book check-in.
I thought we were going to the emails. Yes, we'll make an ass of me later.
On the Shadow of the Torturer, Shadow and Claw. You're almost done, and I just finished.
Yeah.
So how are you liking it? You know, no, we'll get into the specifics of what you liked when we do the wrap-up, but just kind of a check-in, like, as you're getting towards the end, you know, better than Stanislaw Lem, Ben Moore's Found in a Bathtub, not as good as what?
Yes, that is a very low bar to set for me, Tom. Yes, it is better than Memoirs Found in the Bathtub. No, I'm enjoying it. I kind of wish I had read it instead of listening to it, because even though I do like the audiobook version, I feel like I'm missing a lot of the little clues and little notes that Gene Wolfe is putting in there to kind of
It's the kind of thing that is, if you read it the second time through, you will pick up a lot more stuff, even if you're reading it, much less listening to it.
Yeah, so I feel like I should probably go back, and I might do Claw in book form and just read it that way. As we mentioned in previous episodes, we're only really covering Shadow of the Torturer for the book club. Claw is, of course, the next book. So if you want to go into that, you can, by all means. People are discussing it on the forums, but
you don't
need to do it for the book club. It's not a requirement. Not that anything we do is actually a requirement for anything.
It's essentially this weird situation where in print form, they put the first two books together and the last two books together. I've mentioned this on the show before. And in audiobook form, they sell each book separately. Mm-hmm. So we decided to just go with Shadow so that whichever way you choose to consume it, you'll be covered.
Exactly. But yeah, I am liking it. I love the threads that people are covering on Goodreads. I think people are really getting into this book and dissecting it a lot, which I always like. So that's been a really good part of reading this book. I feel like there's a lot of engagement from people reading it and a lot of analysis of the story and what it means.
There's a lot to work with.
Working in this, yeah.
Gene Wolfe has written a very thick and obscure tale. And what I like about it, and the reason I was really interested in having you try it, because I know you didn't like Memoirs Found in the Bathtub because it was very raw impression writing. There wasn't story to it, right? It's all just kind of, you know, a stream of consciousness. Whereas Gene Wolfe, it can appear that way, but then there's this undercurrent of story that really props it up. And it gives you both that sort of like weird impression stream of consciousness, but with an underlying story. And then it takes you on these flights of fancy. And like all of my favorite authors, describes a corner of a world that seems is much, much larger rather than just sort of being kind of a lightweight story that's very shallow. You feel like you're just getting a sample of something that's very well thought out. And in fact, it is.
Can you explain to me again why you keep comparing Stanislaw Lem and Gene Wolfe? You think that if I hated Memoirs Found in the Bathtub, which I did, I would not like Shadow and Claw?
Because the story isn't as direct as it is from Patrick Rothfuss or Joe Abercrombie. You know, in those kinds of fantasy, you have, even though they're told in very innovative and creative ways, you do have a very straightforward story. What Lem did was he threw out all the conventions of story. There's very little plot. There's very little beginning, middle, and end. It's very experimental, and it's very much about the impressions that he's leaving. And Gene Wolfe tends to stray into that. He has a thread of a story, but there's a lot of these deviations that just have to do with internal thought and describing thought processes and philosophies of torture and standing ideas on their head that aren't necessarily directly related to the storytelling.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I am enjoying it a lot more, but we will check in back with the Shadow of the Torturer next time we have a show, and I think we'll bring Josh back if he's willing to come on and really, really dig into it again.
Sounds like a good idea. Let's move on to the emails. David Mitchell wrote in, noting our discussion about whether Middle Earth was our world previously. And just to be fair, I wasn't advocating that I think Middle Earth was Earth, but I was saying that you could make the connection if you wanted to.
I don't remember being fairly adamant.
And he says you were fairly adamant. You were sort of saying, I don't think that's true. I don't think there's any connection there.
But then I forgot that that actually is true.
David Mitchell says, a few things I have always heard. First off, in The Hobbit, in the very beginning, Tolkien pretty much said that hobbits were still around and that they used their magic to escape being seen by us, dumb, clumsy humans. Of course, that could be still around in some other world. I don't know. David also says, I had always heard that Tolkien was upset about England not having its own mythology, and that is why he wrote The Silmarillion. Just the thoughts I had about that.
Yeah, I feel like I also knew that. At some point, it is obviously a fictional setting, but I do remember there being some kind of thing where I don't remember if it was in, maybe it was The Hobbit. I'm thinking of. I'm trying to Google, like, is Middle Earth Earth to find the reference I'm looking for, and I can't find it. But I think he's right. I think it actually is like a precursor to our world.
I think it's left vague so that you can believe whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I like that. That works too. And then we have an email from Binny, who says, I'm a first-time listener from Korea and really enjoyed the last two episodes. I always wanted to find a podcast that contains the information about science fiction fantasy books. Most of the science fiction podcasts deal with mostly films or games. It's really good to have a show like Sword and Laser. Since I'm from Korea, the numbers of SFF, does he mean science fiction and fantasy?
I think so. I think that's what that would mean in that case. Yeah.
The numbers of science fiction and fantasy authors I know are very limited, but I got to know some authors thanks to your show. It's quite hard for me to get copies of books because most of the books haven't even been translated into Korean, except for the universally famous books like Harry Potter or the Lord of the Rings series. So the only chance I've got is to get ebook copies from the internet. The reason I brought up this matter is that it might be good to have an episode about classic science fiction and fantasy books you can get for free on the internet, like from Project Gutenberg and stuff. You could put some of your favorite classic novels in the episode. It would be great. Anyway, I really like listening to your show. Keep up the good work. Much love, Binny.
I love this idea. I don't know. We could talk about whether our next book should be a public domain science fiction fantasy book. But I'm definitely, I think I want to start a thread on Goodreads that asks for people to give us their favorite public domain, Project Gutenberg, freely available science fiction and fantasy books. And then we can just point Beanie at that and hopefully build a nice list for him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I think that's all we got for today. Thanks so much again to our partner StickerFoo. You can use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfoo.com. And of course, if you want to send us an email, the email address as always is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. The website is swordandlaser.com, and you can follow all the discussions at goodreads.com. Look for The Sword and Laser or follow the link for the discussion tab on our website.
Thanks, everybody. We will see you next time.
See you next time.